You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 442 of the Battery Power Podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you on an Easter Sunday evening. I'm joined, as I always am, by Scott Coleman. Scott, the Braves have played three games. It went fairly well. It wasn't perfect. There's an injury. There's a lot going on here. But in the end, of course, they lost on Sunday because why wouldn't they?
That's right, Brad. In very much Battery Power Podcast form, we are in mid-season form at this point. Braves play great on Friday and Saturday and then lose a tough one on Sunday, which is very on brand for what we have done the past couple of seasons. Seems like the Braves, as good as they have been, just haven't been very good on Sundays for whatever reason. But nonetheless, a very successful opening series and a lot to dig into. It's great to have baseball back and happy Easter to everybody out there.
Yes, absolutely. Happy Easter to all. And we, I guess as we're recording this podcast, it is still Sunday. It's going to be Monday fairly soon here on the East Coast where I am. Not so much for Scott's. But we'll get into the opening series. This probably might be a little bit shorter than what we usually would do on a Sunday because there's only three games to talk about. Also, Sean broke down opening day on the same podcast network, which is a good reminder to everyone. If you are a new listener or someone coming back to the podcast, we appreciate it. But also, please subscribe to the show on Apple or Spotify and anywhere you get your podcasts. And it's a great place to kind of house all of your audio needs on the Atlanta Braves. With that said, though, we'll dive in heavily to a 2-1 series victory for the Braves over the weekend. And we'll begin, Scott, I would say, with opening day, which is only a couple of hours ago now, as we're talking here. And remember when we talked last week, you and I guess only a few days ago at this point, about Spencer Strider and kind of the weird narrative about how he had, quote unquote, struggled against Philadelphia, which really wasn't true at all. He went out there and looked pretty darn good, as he usually does. And with the help of the offense breaking out late in the game, it was kind of a nice, breezy, fun opening day.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, for the first time ever, Strider and Wheeler squared off, which is a little funny to think about in the regular season. But, you know, the pitching matchup lived up to the hype, especially early on. Neither side could really get much going. I actually thought the Braves did a pretty solid job overall against Zach Wheeler. They didn't score off of him over his 5-plus innings, but you know, they got runners on base. They had a couple of balls hit well that were just right at somebody. And really, it seemed like it was going as we kind of suspected. And then I think in the fifth inning, Strider ran out of gas a little bit. And then we saw just how quickly the Braves lineup can turn it on. I mean, in like a real time of 30 or 40 minutes, they just kind of completely blitzed the Philadelphia bullpen. And suddenly a game that looked like it might be a final score of 1-0 or 2-0 ended up being a blowout.
Yeah, 9-3 final, in part, I guess, mostly because the Braves scored 7 runs in the 8th inning. That was where things kind of broke out. Of course, they tied the game in the 7th, based on our guy Adam Duvall, of course. But quickly before we get to that, you made this note in our notes, and I certainly agree with this, about Strider and the curveball. We were kind of talking about, you know, how much he was going to use it. We saw it a lot in spring. He did lean on it at a decent level. I thought it looked really good. And essentially, Strider was Strider other than one bad pitch. I mean, obviously, it's never one bad pitch, but the only mistake that kind of got beaten up was the home run. But he looked like himself in that curveball. If that is real, man, it's going to be pretty scary for everybody.
Well, and it felt like Spencer had the curveball whenever he wanted it, which is really impressive. That was one thing we were really keeping an eye on. It's one thing to see how many times a pitcher throws the pitch in spring training when games don't mean a whole lot. But I mean, from the opening batter of the game, he was throwing the curve. He had full command of it. And I mean, you talk about having the upper 90s fastball, a 90 mile an hour slider and then a curve that was anywhere from 80 to 85. And he even mixed in a couple of changeups as well to the lefties. I mean, he absolutely had full confidence in his three big pitches. I mean, that's just, it's going to be really exciting to see what Strider can do, because I think all of us, I mean, even Alex Anthopoulos talked about it in the booth a little bit when he was talking about wanting to work in a curveball. It's like, well, okay.
Do you need one?
you've been really successful with this fastball and this slider as your two primary pitches. And, you know, Spencer's credit, it is a whole lot easier said than done to just have a plus curveball out of nowhere, seemingly. And again, it was just one start. I think we could probably say it was just one game or just one start for everything you and I are going to talk about today.
Yep.
But man, it looked really good and just such an impressive thing to do that in the spring, essentially have a new really good pitch to your mix.
Yeah, we agree. And of course, we'll talk more about him much later on, but it looked good through one start. I wanted to ask you, there was a little bit of discussion about a decision or of some kind. Like, if you're a new listener, you might not know this. We kind of go deep sometimes into, you know, bullpen management or, you know, decision-making by Brian Snicker, et cetera. It wasn't a super controversial choice, but there was some discussion about it. The Braves on opening day had Adam Duvall pinch hit for Jared Kelenic. And of course it worked. It ended up being a game tying double by Duvall. What did you make of that? I mean, it wasn't like a huge surprise because of the handedness and all of that stuff, but Kelenic had a good weekend, which was good to see. But that was sort of the first foray into the will he or won't they with regard to left field.
It was going to be fascinating to see how the plate appearances divvied up with Duvall and Kelenic. And as we saw this weekend, Kelenic made two starts, and it was against righties, and Duvall started against lefties, which was not a surprise. However, I was really curious to see as that inning was evolving. The Braves were down by two. There were two runners on, and Brian Snitker pulled Kelenic in favor of Duvall, and it was against a left-handed reliever. So in my opinion, that was 100% the correct call in a high-leverage spot. It's not a lack of belief in Kelenic, but Adam Duvall is on this roster for a reason, and that's to mash left-handed pitching. And of course, it worked out. So whenever things work out, everyone's happier and it looks better in hindsight. But I am hoping and optimistic that while maybe in the highest of leverage spots, as we saw on Friday, where Duvall gets the opportunity to come through, I do hope the Braves give Kelenic at least a handful of plate appearances against left-handed pitching this year, because very clearly, Kelenic is a real piece who could be involved with the Braves for years. And while we like Adam Duvall, he is more of a one-year play a role and play it well type, but he is not a long-term core piece the way that Kelenic could be.
Yeah, that's a good synopsis, and I just wanted to bring it up because I think we both agree it was the right move. It was just the first time that we kind of saw that pivot point happen in real time, and I wonder what the reaction would have been if Duvall struck out, but he did, so there you go. We'll get into kind of what happened on Sunday with regard to the bullpen not holding up at the end of the bargain and what became the only loss. But so with that said, we should note that they were actually quite good on Friday and on Saturday, really. I was impressed with what I saw from the bullpen on the whole, even when accounting for today, because especially as we'll get into in a second, Saturday they had to throw a lot of innings because of the short outing from Max Fried, and the likes of, you know, Pierce Johnson and Minter, et cetera, did their jobs over the weekend.
Yeah, other than one unfortunate inning on Sunday, the bullpen was terrific.
Yep.
And I think we have a lot of optimism, and we think this is going to be a good bullpen. We saw Joe Jimenez twice this weekend. We saw Pierce Johnson twice. We saw AJ Minter. We saw Aaron Bummer. And other than that aforementioned unfortunate inning for Bummer on Sunday, you know, the group was really good. And when the bullpen was called upon after Strider departed, it was still a close game at this point. The Braves had not broken it open. And similarly, on Saturday, when Max Fried only went two thirds, of course, the game was quite close early on. And then, you know, the margin is so much smaller, of course, whenever you go to the bullpen that early in a game. Everyone's kind of looking around like, man, eight plus innings that we're going to have to cover on Saturday and on Friday in front of a raucous crowd. Having to cover four innings against a fully loaded Phillies lineup is no easy task. So really a good weekend overall for the bullpen. We'll talk more about the unfortunate blow up with Aaron Bummer on Sunday, but overall a lot of things to be encouraged by. And it looks like it's going to be a group that really does have some depth 1 through 8.
Certainly. The one sort of downturn from Friday, which I know that our colleague Sean Coleman covered a little bit on the Hammer on Friday night, But Sean Murphy left the game on opening day with what is now known to be a grade one left oblique strain. Immediately after the game, Brian Sicker said he's going to go on the IL. So there was no hemming and hawing. It was like, you know, within minutes after the final pitch on Friday, we all knew he was going to the IL. On Saturday, Snit then said it was going to be, quote, a while. No one has given a projected time frame officially from the Braves side. It is grade one. It's the first time that Murphy's ever had an oblique injury. So that's a little bit of a, you know, good thing slash bad thing. Like, you don't know how he's going to react, but it's not like it's not been a persistent issue for him. What did you make of that? Obviously, we've praised the catcher situation a lot, both this year heading into it and in previous years. It's a huge luxury to have Travis d'Arnaud on this team. But at the same time, Sean Murphy is a reigning all-star who's an awesome player who's been pretty durable in his career. And to have him go down, you know, within minutes of the first pitch of the season was not fun for anybody.
Definitely a concern. And I did some research. There was a piece on MLB.com about oblique injuries. And it was a medical doctor talking about just how tricky and unique oblique injuries tend to be. It's not something like a sprained ankle for a basketball player, where it's generally a pretty similar prescription and what you're supposed to do in order to get it healed, right? Obliques, they can be as short as a couple of days or a couple of weeks to, thankfully, it's not a severe strain. But I mean, a severe strain can cost a player a lot of part of a season. So just the grade one for Murphy, I would guess based on the history of oblique injuries, on average, a position player misses 27 days with an oblique strain. So 4 weeks, of course, catcher is a much more physically demanding position than anywhere else on the field. For pitchers, actually, it's even longer than that. Usually it's 5 or 6 weeks to recover. So we'll see with Murph. I would imagine it's pretty safe to say that he probably won't play much, if at all, during the month of April. But again, it wasn't like one of those things where, I mean, thank goodness there wasn't surgery required or it wasn't a grade two or grade three, because then you're talking about having a real problem at the position.
Yeah. I mean, d'Arnaud just being there is a huge safety blanket. You know, 27 days, I know you're not saying this. I'm just going to say it again. We don't know how long it's going to be. That's the average time. That would be a good result. It sounds like a long time, but it would be a pretty good result. It is kind of just brutal for that to happen. And, you know, Chadwick Trump is not someone who's exciting, let's just say. He's kind of the prototypical third catcher who can't really hit at all. He'll fill his position. I wonder, Scott, like, how much, you know, given that Travis d'Arnaud is not a young man by baseball standards, you know, a lot of guys, it's interesting, like, no catchers play every day no matter what, but how much do you think the Braves should kind of take it easy on d'Arnaud? Like, no one wants, again, they know that Trump isn't their best option, but this is a team that likes to play their best guys every single day, as we've kind of joked about in the past. But how much can you realistically or responsibly play Travis d'Arnaud, kind of weighing that battle between, like, hey, he's obviously our guy, but we don't want to sort of wear him out in April?
I would imagine that they will play d'Arnaud in the night games and have Trump catch the day games, would be my guess. I would be pretty surprised, quite honestly, if d'Arnaud ever did the day game after the night game.
Yeah.
At his age, and even, you know, even a couple of years ago, he wasn't really doing that. And you mentioned Trump. I mean, I think defensively, Trump is fine.
Yeah, he's fine.
It's just offensively, man, you're hoping that he makes contact and it finds a patch of grass somewhere.
By the way, to back you up there, last year in AAA, again, this is AAA, he had an 84 WRC plus in about 70-ish games. And the year before that, it was 92. So the last 2 years in Gwinnett, he has been a below average hitter at the AAA level. So that kind of tells you what you're dealing with here.
Yeah, he is the epitome. Trump is the epitome of a third catcher in an organization. We said on the series preview podcast a week ago that at some point Chadwick Trump was probably going to get called on because
immediately.
It is very difficult. Yeah, very difficult for catchers to stay healthy all year long. Now, of course, I don't think anyone was expecting Murphy to get hurt on opening day, which is a real bummer. Murph, of course, had a really good spring and we were feeling good about his outlook. And we know how talented this guy is. So just a bummer to be sure. But I mean, it really just does come to show how fortunate the Braves are to have Travis d'Arnaud. I would imagine it will be like a 67-33 split where two out of three games in a series will be d'Arnaud, and then they'll have Trump rotate in. I suppose if there's a series where there's three night games, maybe they could get away with Darnell all three nights. But again, you also need to protect Travis. You don't want to get him hurt, because goodness, if Travis were to get hurt as well, then you're really scrambling. And I mean, things could get pretty nasty in a hurry.
Yeah, start knocking on wood now for Darnell to be healthy for the next month plus, because if he goes down, it gets a little bit dicey, let's just say. All right, let's move on to some another win, I guess, on Saturday. Interesting game. Ended up being a 12-4 victory. The Braves led 2-0 after quite literally five pitches. Alec Bohm, old pal, made an error against Ronnie, and then Ozzie homered, and it was 2-0, and you're feeling good. And then on the other side of things, Max Fried kind of imploded, but we'll talk about that in a second. We'll see on the positive first. The Braves scored 12 runs and 19 hits on Saturday against a very good pitching staff in general, and also a very good starting pitcher in Aaron Nola. Four home runs. Like, it was just a masterclass of offense on Saturday, and it was not just one explosion like it kind of was on Friday. It was early, often, and all the way through.
Yeah, it was relentless against Aaron Nola, who was almost an Atlanta Braves based on the reporting that we heard earlier.
I mean, Alex, like, shockingly kind of admitted that they were down the road on Nola in a way he doesn't usually do. That was kind of a funny revelation that he gave us early in the winter. If you missed that, if that never says anything about anything, and he essentially confirmed on the air that they were to the finalist level with Nola.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the Braves from the early going, they just ambush Nola. I mean, even in like the third inning, Nola kept looking over at the dugout like, guys, I'm done. I can't keep doing this. And they said, you know what, big boy, you got that $170 million contract. You're going to sit out there and you're going to cover a couple innings for us. But yeah, I mean, 12 runs, 19 hits, four home runs. I mean, they just all throughout the game, there was seemingly never a let up from the lineup. And it was a good thing because, as you kind of teased, Max Fried, it was the shortest start of his career, only two-thirds of an inning. If we knew going in that Max wasn't even going to make it out of the first, we would have all thought, oh boy, this is going to be an ugly one. And they ended up winning. I mean, a big tip of the cap to the bullpen, which was phenomenal as well, as we're talking about the positives from Saturday. Bullpen was phenomenal. Offense was really good. Jared Kelnick had three hits. I mean, he had a really great opening weekend. We should talk about him here. Three hits on Saturday, couple of hits on Friday, had a terrific defensive play as well on Saturday afternoon, a play that, frankly, the Braves have not had made in left field in recent years, because as much as we love Eddie Rosario, he was pretty limited defensively out there. And Kelnick even had a great pinch hit appearance on Sunday as well. So really, I mean, for the whole lineup, other than maybe Austin Riley, who wasn't great, basically everybody else in the lineup had a really good weekend. And it was a lot of fun on Saturday, especially all the craziness early on.
Yeah, Ozuna really was kind of bad other than one swing, but he did homer, and him and Riley were kind of the only guys that didn't. So there you go. Speaking of Fried, okay, I don't know if you were online during the game on Saturday. The takes were heavy, as they often are, especially early in the season, Scott.
Everything gets made. It's the playoffs and it's the opening week of the year. Everything gets magnified probably way more than it should, at least for the first week of the year.
Yes, I think that's probably true just in general, but especially to your point, this early. You know, first, Max, I don't know how much this affected him at all, but he slid trying to field like a tapper back to in the infield in the first inning. They checked on him and the training staff. He stayed in the game. It didn't go after that. I got to say, I tweeted one of my, you know, kind of snarky comments, like, it wasn't a great day for Max Fried. That was all I said. And everyone wanted to alert me, like, I didn't know that he got squeezed, like, as bad as someone could possibly get squeezed on a walk. I'm sure you saw it, Scott, and I'm waiting on it. One of the worst ball strike calls you'll ever see. Literally a third strike, middle. I'm not sure it was middle, but it was basically middle. Hilariously bad call. I don't know if that would have changed the whole game for Max Fried, or the whole inning, so to speak. But obviously, we did see that. It was not a lot of fun for Max. But from there, like, you know, gave a two-run single. I was curious to know, we'll probably never know, like, why the hook was as quick as it was. I don't think he looked as bad as, like, a two-thirds of an inning outing would kind of tell you. Does that make sense? Like, I don't think he was pitching as poorly as that indicates. Maybe he was. I don't know.
He had thrown a lot of pitches.
That's true.
And, you know, to be fair to Max, and, you know, I think to answer your question, no, he did not look very sharp.
No.
Did not have great command. thank goodness. I mean, he could have torn something in his knee or in his ankle the way he fielded that ball.
Oh, I was terrified. That was much scarier. I mean, of course, we already knew about Murphy from the previous day, and I'm thinking, wow, are they about to lose Max Fried and Sean Murphy in like a period of 20 hours? Like, what's going on here? And hopefully, I mean, all indications are he's fine physically. That wasn't why he came out of the game. I actually had somebody DM me that wasn't watching and was like, hey, did Fried get hurt? And I was like, I mean, kind of, but no, that wasn't why he came out. So just a little bit of a, you know, the combination of him having that issue where like he might be hurt and then also throwing 43 pitches and being pulled after two outs. Like, I don't think it was injury related, but it was just notable to me.
Yeah. And, you know, in Max's defense, he should have been out of the inning.
Yes.
That pitch right down the middle of the Castellanos was strike three, would have been the third out. I mean, even Castellanos was like looking into the Phillies dugout, kind of laughing a little bit like, whoa, he knew he was out. I mean, everybody in the ballpark knew that he was out other than the person whose opinion matters. And that's the home plate umpire. I think because it was the first start of the year and it was already at 43 pitches for Max. I mean, that's a lot. Yep. We saw this weekend for both Strider and Sale. You know, no one's throwing 100 pitches the first start of the year. It was pretty chilly that day as well. And the absolute last thing you want to do is have Max throw 50 pitches in the first inning of the first game of the year. So I think in hindsight, it was the right call. Obviously, the Braves offense exploded. Maybe that played a part as well, that they were getting to Nola pretty early. I mean, it was, I guess, obviously it was a good thing that Max was not injured on the play. I think it was probably time to get him out of there because you just don't want him to strain something trying to power through an otherwise really just frankly not that important baseball game on March 30th.
Yes. And for the record, provided there is no injury, which again, we don't think that there is, I don't worry at all about this for Max Fried. Max Fried is an established pitcher. Is it possible that he might struggle? Sure. But he's the kind of guy where if he is healthy, I don't think that I have much of a concern about one star. I mean, going back to the take machine, there are people talking about, you know, all this pressure on him and a walk year and all this stuff. You know, maybe he'll have a bad year. I'm not saying he won't, but nothing about my opinion of Max Fried's 2024 performance was shaped by that first start. It just doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, no, I would agree entirely.
We'll see, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah, he did not have the greatest spring either, so he might just still be off a little bit, mechanically speaking. Not everybody is 100% ready to go midseason form the first series of the year. Max will very likely make we'll see. He was lined up to start the home opener on Friday at Truist Park, although the weather in Chicago looks miserable the next 3 days. Who knows how many games they're going to be able to play. But regardless, whether it's at the home opener or sometime next weekend for Fried, he should be well-rested. He only threw the 43 pitches. I'm with you. Max could go probably a month and a half of not pitching well before I would start to hit the panic button a little bit. He has done this really well for a long time. And, let's hope Saturday was just kind of a blip on the radar.
For sure. We talked about the bullpen already, but just again, kudos to them for navigating literally 8 1/3 innings on Saturday. It helped to have a huge lead, but nothing is assured when one of your aces goes down literally after getting two outs. So Jesse Chavez, newly acquired, all that fun stuff, bridges the gap, and then everybody kind of holds it down from there, from Matzik to Johnson, Dylan Lee, etc. So a nice little performance there.
Jesse Chavez, the man, the myth, the legend. I mean, the dude just, man, I don't know what it is.
Freshly signed in those three innings out of the gate.
And it's not even like it's just something that Braves fans know. Like across Major League Baseball, I think it's known by fans that Jesse Chavez goes anywhere else but Atlanta, and he's not good. And whenever he's with the Braves, he's phenomenal. I think I don't know who had the stat, but basically since 2019, when Jesse Chavez makes a pitch for anybody that's not the Braves, his ERA is upwards of 6. But whenever he's with the Braves, it's like 2.9 or some crazy number. Three big innings in relief of Fried to keep everything calm, gave the Braves an opportunity to really blow the game open offensively. Just the fact that the bullpen was able to cover basically an entire game in game two of the year is really impressive and a testament to how much depth is in that group.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Let us move on to Sunday and the only loss of the weekend. Of course, Ozzie Albies hits another two-run homer in the first inning. I'm not going to do the crowing thing yet, Scott, but I'm feeling good about my prediction that Ozzie Albies is going to have his best year of his career. I'm just feeling good about it.
I tweeted you.
You did.
It's as good of a start, and both a home run from the right side and the left side, which is really encouraging. Just a really great start offensively for Ozzie.
He's slugging .846 for three games. And yes, I understand, folks, it's three games. I'm not actually like really excited compared to previous, but it didn't hurt my prediction so far. Let's talk about Chris Sale. So his debut with the Braves and with the game that matters, pitched pretty well to me. Five and a third, gives up two runs, strikes out seven, modest pitch count. People were kind of taking notice even nationally, like, hey, he looks like Chris Sale, which is what we talked about a lot in the winter. It was like, hey, this guy's kind of never been bad when he's been healthy. He looked good to me. He navigated one jam, but essentially checked the box that you want to see checked. And like you said before, at the end of March is still the caveat there, but the game didn't matter, so he pitched good.
Right. Yes. 159 games to go. It is very, very, very early. But yes, Chris Sale looked like capital letters, Chris Sale. I was very impressed. I think everybody else was. It would be hard not to be impressed. And I mean, he had five and a third innings, seven strikeouts, 83 pitches. Now, he didn't have his full command. Historically, he has not walked very many. He only threw 56 strikes of the 83 pitches he threw, which is not a great ratio. It's not bad by any means, but you know, he had a couple of moments where he very clearly lost his command. But that's to be expected. I looked it up. Historically, Chris Sale's worst month is March/April. His ERA and FIP is about a half run higher in March and April than it is the rest of the year, which is exciting because he was really good today. You just have to hope that his health cooperates. But man, he had all of his pitches working. His fastball touched 98. Which is pretty crazy. Ooh. For a guy like him. The slider was nasty. I mean, he was getting really awkward swings really throughout the game. And then I thought Brian Snitker did a good job as well handling Sale. He got to the sixth inning, got one out, and then gave up a 105-mile-an-hour single up the middle and then just missed giving up a home run, a ball that I thought JT Realmuto got all of, and Adam Duvall very thankfully caught it at the warning track. And that was it. It was a pretty quick hook, which is a good thing. But overall, I think there's a lot to build on here from Sale, and just, again, an abundance of riches to have him as the number three in this rotation.
Yeah, feeling pretty good. We'll keep doing check-ins, of course. Also, it was his birthday. That's always nice to pitch a ball on your birthday. Shout out to Chris Sale. He turned 35 on the day of that outing on Saturday, so nice to see that. No, actually, that was yesterday. I'm doing the math wrong here. Birthday was yesterday. He pitched the day after, alas. So we teased it earlier, but let's talk about the downturn of the game. That was the bullpen in the seventh inning. So first it was a leadoff walk by Joe Jimenez, and then Aaron Bummer allowed four consecutive singles, essentially to turn a game in from a lead to a deficit that ended up being a loss. Kind of similar to Max Fried, when we talked about him kind of being one pitch away. And him actually getting actively hosed by that pitch. Bummer was, I would describe it as inches/milliseconds away from getting out of the inning with a double play. It was actually called that way, and then it was overturned. Not the greatest turn slash throw from Ozzie, I will say, even as an Ozzie guy. It was close. It was obviously the right call to overturn it, I thought, in my mind. But, you know, from there, we can debate this. He didn't get, like, absolutely shelled. It was singles. You know, this is the kind of thing that I want to pivot. Like, Aaron Bummer was controversial in some corners when they went out and got him this winter because he had a high ERA last year. I saw some people referencing that. I get it. He didn't pitch great in that outing. I'm not saying that by any means, but kind of similar to Max. Like, I don't think you should change your opinion of Aaron Bummer based on that performance. But, you know, four singles in a row to kind of effectively lose the game wasn't great, but also wasn't, like, terribly alarming. I don't know, for me.
Yeah, I mean, literally a game of an inch or maybe 2 inches. You mentioned the double play. I thought Ozzie took his time on the turn. I mean, it was truly a milliseconds difference at first base. But we know how small the margin is for relievers, right? If he turns that double play, we're not talking about a disastrous seventh inning. We're talking about him getting out of a jam and the Braves presumably win the game, right? Similarly, one of the batters came up, I think the next hitter after the double play ball, hit a ball to left field that Adam Duvall just couldn't quite catch. Like, we're talking game of inches, maybe 2 inches deeper, and Adam catches it. Instead, it bounced off the tip of his glove, and I think two runs came in to score for the lead. So really, it was just, it wasn't great. Let's not call it differently than it is. Aaron Bummer was someone who had a very high batting average on balls in play last year, was unfortunate and unlucky in some ways. But at the end of the day, it's a results-based business. You would like to see him get out of trouble and not give up four hits in a row. So I know that, as we talked about, everything is going to get amplified and magnified the first series of the year. You just have to hope that he settles in a bit more because, the Braves clearly like Bummer. He has good stuff. He just didn't have a great Sunday.
Yeah, not hugely concerned, but that was the difference in the game in some respects. And it was an inch or two, and that happens over the course of 162. So nothing to panic about. The Braves did try to come back. There was a near home run by Kelnick. He then scored, and then Olsen had a chance to tie it. He hit the ball hard, but it was not a super unlucky play. Just kind of hit it hard into the outfield, fly out, and that was the end of that. And then they kind of no-threaded in the ninth inning to lose. So, look, would have been nice to sweep the Phillies. Certainly it would have been. But taking a step or two back, going out and winning two in Philadelphia, ones versus ones, you face Wheeler, you face Nola, you face Suarez, and to go out and get two out of three and nearly go three for three in those games. I think there's not really a way to spin anything but positive of those three games. They could have won the third one for sure, but we're probably measured more than most would be at this point, but I have a hard time complaining about the result of the series.
Oh yeah. I mean, two out of three at Philadelphia, which is going to be one of the toughest road trips the Braves make all year. The Braves actually won't go back to Philly until August for their second series of the year with the balanced schedule now, which still feels a little weird. I mean, I'm in favor of the balanced schedule, but only going to Philadelphia twice feels weird. I don't know. I mean, we'll see where the two teams are at in August. You take two out of three, you face three really good starting pitchers. And really, we know Sunday was a total toss-up, a 50-50 game. The Braves couldn't quite win, but they dominated games one and two of the series. So you're 2-1, you take it. It's unfortunate that you lose Murphy for at least a couple of weeks, if not a month or so here. But other than that, all good things. And now they will shift their eyes to very, very cold Chicago and the White Sox.
Yeah, and just one more note on the series before we sort of look ahead to the coming week. The Braves scored 25 runs in three games against what most would describe as one of the best stabs top to bottom in Philadelphia in the entire league. That is fairly impressive in itself. They literally had, I'm looking at it now, they had seven regulars: Albies, Harris, Arcia, Kelnick, Olsen, Duvall, and Acuna. So I guess six and a half if you want to combine Kelnick and Duvall in some way. All those guys had an OPS over 900 in the first series against top level competition. Fresh bullpen in Philadelphia, et cetera, et cetera. Like, the offense, this is not breaking any ground after they led the league and everything last year, but they're pretty good on offense. Yeah. I think this team's going to be in good shape on that side.
Yeah, very good. I mean, even, and we talked about how well they performed. I mean, I think Ronald Acuña only had singles. I don't think we've said
he was
Ronald.
Human. He was human.
Yes, right. All he had was singles, which is very ho-hum for him. No extra base hits. You know, Austin Riley did not have a great week weekend. Marcelo Zuna didn't have a great weekend. And even with three of your top six in the lineup not doing their usual phenomenal stuff, as you just listed, 25 runs in three games against a really good pitching staff. The lineup, to me, I mean, we know how good it was last year. In some ways, it could be even better if they get a couple of big-time performances out of these players who have some variance to their games, like Jared Kelnick, Orlando Arcia. See what Adam Duvall can do in a split role. It's going to be a lot of fun to see what kind of numbers this lineup can put up.
Certainly will be. Speaking of which, we will get out of here and talk about the coming week. You referenced it earlier. We're recording this podcast at 10-something p.m. Eastern time on Sunday, the 31st of March. The Braves are scheduled to play on Monday in Chicago. And Scott referenced earlier, like, the weather is not good, both temperature-wise and precipitation-wise. Over the weekend, it's a 2:00 afternoon game. So there's a chance people listen to this podcast and the game's already been rained out or delayed or whatever. Just keep in mind, the temperatures are in the 40s. Like, it's going to be hideous baseball weather this week. Hopefully they play the games, but there's a chance that you get a rainout or two of these three games. And, you know, right now, the old guy is lined up to pitch on Monday, Charlie Morton. Then it's Ronaldo Lopez against his old team, which will be interesting, on Tuesday, and the Strider on Wednesday. But all of that is a giant TBD given the weather.
Yeah, I could probably go on a 5-minute rant here.
Go ahead.
Just stupid scheduling for the Braves and the White Sox, because anybody who has been to Chicago in April knows how frigid it can be, especially the first couple of days here. And it's an interleague game. So if one of these games gets postponed and they can't make it up over the next three days, then the Braves at some point this summer are going to have to make a special trip to Chicago to make up one game against a pretty lousy White Sox team. And I know that you're trying to schedule 162 games for 30 teams. It is not an easy thing to do. But man, I mean, you're telling me that they couldn't have found like a divisional opponent for the Braves and the White Sox to play instead, so they don't have to do this series in early April. It's really unfortunate. Of course, if the weather was better, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But I mean, I am not a weatherman, but I would be shocked if we get all three of these games in. Maybe by some miracle, they play a doubleheader or something like that. I think on Wednesday, there's snow in the forecast. It's just going to be nasty. I guess the one silver lining is that the Monday and Wednesday games are scheduled for day games, so maybe they'll be able to battle through the weather. But then you also just worry that if it's 38 degrees and you know, rain falling, you don't want somebody to get hurt because they're playing in these conditions either. So just unfortunate that we're having to even have this conversation. And we'll just cross our fingers and hope we get baseball.
Yeah, and you know, this is not—it's not quite the same extent because of other factors. But you know, our guy Justin Toscano was making fun of the weather in Philadelphia this week, comparing it to the weather in Atlanta, which, by the way, has been beautiful this weekend for a baseball park that's not being used down the street from me. That is frustrating, considering they had to rain the game out on Thursday in Philly, as we talked about. Kind of, we didn't necessarily call it. We definitely said that they might rain it out on our last podcast. So yeah, it's just odd for a Southern team to be playing back-to-back series pretty north in the cold and weather in late March, early April, when they could be playing snugly in 70-degree temperatures in Atlanta. But alas, that is, you gave the caveats appropriately. It is hard, but it does not look great right now, especially if they start losing games in Chicago this week.
Right. No, it does not. So let's hope for baseball. You know, we talked about the White Sox a little bit.
They're awful. They're awful.
They are pretty bad. They do have a lot of old friends on the roster. I mean, everybody from Braden Shoemake, who hit his first home run of his career the other day. They have Michael Soroka, who is not going to pitch. They have Kevin Pillar. I mean, they've kind of taken away the castaways of the Atlanta Braves, but they are pretty bad. The White Sox got swept over the opening weekend at home by the Detroit Tigers. And, you know, the lineup isn't atrocious. They have some decent names at the top, but the pitching staff is pretty bad. The bullpen is pretty bad. And, you know, hopefully if they're able to get a couple games in, the Braves can go in and win at least 2 out of 3. I know that baseball, nothing is guaranteed and weird stuff can happen, but this is a team that's just light years beyond what the Braves are in terms of talent and just ability to win baseball games.
Yeah, caveats all apply. Nothing is assured, like you just referenced. The Braves did lose a series or two last year to teams on this similar level. So they are certainly capable in a baseball context of losing 2 out of 3 in Chicago. But this is a bad team that started out poorly, is projected poorly, is not as talented as the Braves. So, you know, losing the series would not be great, but we'll see how everybody looks. We'll see how Morton looks. I think everybody's looking forward to that Lopez start, not because he is a starting, but also because he's facing his whole team. And then hopefully we'll see Strider on Wednesday. And if not, we'll see how they change things. If they do get a rain out, I do wonder, maybe they would throw Strider on Friday in the home opener. I think Braves fans who are worried about, you know, not seeing one of their guys on Friday, you know, I'm sure that that place will be rocking at Truist for the home opener. Like, you know, it basically always is these days when they sell tickets, they print money over there. But home opener, I'm sure, is going to be electric. I would be shocked if it is not one of Strider or Fried in that game, rainouts or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds right. And I mean, the beauty of this Braves team is, I mean, you get an opportunity to see one of three really, really good starting pitchers if you buy a ticket for the game that night, and maybe even one of four if you want to throw Chuck Morton in there. And then
you better throw him in there, Scott. You better throw
that's
him
right.
In
I know. I did that for you, Brad. I know there are many many opinions on Chuck at age 40. Let's hope for a good year. And then all eyes on Ronaldo Lopez, to be sure. That was, of course, one of the few roster battles this spring. By all accounts, he pitched well down in Florida. And I'm sure if the game happens, he will be plenty ramped up against his old team in Chicago. And then, yeah, of course, the White Sox series for three, and then the home opener against the reigning National League champion Arizona Diamondbacks in a move that nobody saw last year. The Diamondbacks beat up on the Rockies, although that's not saying a whole lot over over this weekend.
Speaking of bad teams, the Rockies.
Oh, man. They might lose 115 games. Yeah, that's not even hyperbole.
They're not good.
They're horrible. Ownership doesn't care. I mean, it's just bad. But, you know, the Diamondbacks are, we don't know yet who will pitch those games. But, of course, they have Zach Gallen, who's very good. They just they have Merrill Kelly. They just signed Montgomery as a free agent. And they have a pretty good, young, exciting lineup. The Braves had six really entertaining baseball games with the Diamondbacks a year ago. I think they split them 3-3. So a good team, to be sure. And I am envious of folks getting to be at Truist Park this weekend, because I'm sure it will be a madhouse.
Yeah, that'll be a fun test. Ironically, Scott, I will be in Arizona this weekend while the Diamondbacks are in Atlanta, because I have to go cover the Final Four in your home state. But that'll be interesting. And I briefly forgot that the Diamondbacks were in town, and I went to go look to see if the Diamondbacks were playing this weekend in Arizona. And I was like, oh yeah, they're in Atlanta, so they're not playing.
Yeah.
Bad beat for me. I wanted to go see a baseball game and I couldn't. So
I don't even know this. And I don't know if you know this, can you even buy like season tickets to the Braves, or are they waitlist?
They are waitlist, I believe, at this point. I know they were, I'm not an expert on this. I know they were when they opened the park, they had a pretty decent waitlist, and I am rather confident that it would not be a pick up the phone and call and say, please buy right now. It wouldn't be that easy. Maybe if you were looking at the expensive stuff, maybe it would be a little easier. But yeah, I think that there is a waiting list, if I have to guess.
It makes sense. I would imagine. I mean, just it's just awesome to see the park filled every night. Again, it'll be a great atmosphere in both the stadium and at the Battery. And hopefully, Brad, I get out to Atlanta here soon for a game. I was there in 2019 for a series at Truist, but I've only been to Truist one time. So, and likewise, if anybody listening has friends who has the super seats right behind the plate, give me a holler. Yeah. I will happily
Scott will fly out for the low price of a free ticket behind the plate.
That's right. I'm not picky. I'll sit
to back myself up here. I'm going to read the Braves website. Quote, for a chance to secure a 2024 A-list membership, join the wait list and secure your spot in line. Oof. So, you cannot buy, as expected, tickets right now for the season. They have some one-offs, but I mean, even then, I know some season ticket holders, and you know, there's a profitable secondary market if you cannot go to every game. Let's just say you can flip those around. There's always demand these days. The Braves are pretty good and people like to go to games. So alas. All right, Scott, let's get out of here. Please share anything you'd like to. I have gone 40 minutes without asking you about basketball, and I won't do that to you on this podcast. What else is going on in your life?
You are a saint, Brad. Thank you for not bringing up those old wounds. Thanks to everybody. We are in our normal time slot here on Sunday evenings, whether it's Sunday night or Monday when you listen to this podcast. We appreciate your support. This will be our normal flow for the next 6+ months on Sunday nights with Brad and I. And then, of course, we have the Daily Hammer with Sean throughout the week. And then the podcast to be named later, usually on Wednesdays or Thursdays with Chris and with Steven. So very happy to have baseball back. A good weekend overall for the Atlanta Braves. And we will have no shortage of things to talk about here in the coming weeks and months. And hopefully a deep run coming for this team in October.
That's right. So please subscribe. We'll have plenty of content coming. The best possible way to ensure that you listen to every single episode, or at least have access to it, is to subscribe and tell a friend about the podcast as well. Apple, Spotify, read the site, batterypower.com. For Scott, for myself, and for Chris, Steven, Sean, etc. on the podcast, we do appreciate all of your support. And we'll see you all next time.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.